Good afternoon, everybody. Joe Beaumont here on behalf of the Tacoma Historical Society with another Grit City story. My special guest today, Ms. Erin Lasley, the 62nd Airlift Wing historian. How are you doing today, Erin?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm great. It's great to have you back on the show. Thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you got more stories. I got more listeners. Let's keep this rolling. So today I want to ask you about, you know, your namesake. What is the 62nd Airlift Wing? Like, what is this, you know, nomenclature that most people just see on a sign on the side of the highway?
Right. So the 62nd Airlift Wing, it is a... It's exactly what it sounds like. It's an airlift wing. Mm-hmm. At the moment, we fly C-17 Globemaster 3s, mm-hmm. and we're all about global airlift, both tactical, humanitarian, and obviously global. We fly everywhere in the world, all seven continents, including Antarctica.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes, it's very cool.
How do you get on one of those flights, out of curiosity?
I've tried very hard the last 5 years to get on one of those missions. It's our deep freeze mission, support of the National Science Foundation, down to McMurdo Station and the South Pole.
Oh, wow.
And because I'm like, you know, a historian should really cover this. You know, it's really important.
I agree fully, and I'm also selfish. Yes, how can I do this?
But it's not up to us who's on the crew. It's actually up to the National Science Foundation.
Okay.
So they give the yay or nay who gets to go and land on the ice.
Okay. Good to know. Sorry to cut you off there. Immediately got curious, but wait, fly to the Antarctica. Okay.
Oh, yeah. When talking to people not familiar with our mission, it's one of those, you know, you've landed on a runway. Now try landing on ice. That's how awesome these guys are. And women. I always say guys, I mean women in there too.
Okay. So back to the 62nd.
Yeah.
Back in the hemisphere.
The 62nd has actually been around since 1947. But before we get to that, we actually have some squadrons in the 62nd Airlift Group.
Okay.
Or the operations group, I should say. They were actually around during World War II.
Oh, that's cool.
So the 4th, 7th, and 8th Troop Carrier Squadrons.
Okay.
And back then they would have been the 62nd Troop Carrier Group, which is different than the wing.
Yep.
So they came about in the late 1930s, early 1940s, trained here with C-47 SkyTrains, you've ever seen a World War II movie, you've seen a SkyTrain.
Yeah, so you've seen them in Saving Private Ryan, you've seen them in, you know, A Bridge Too Far, the famous 87 takeoffs in a row.
Band of Brothers, those are SkyTrains. they trained here in the United States. They went over to England, trained there for a while, and then they went down to North Africa to help with the Allied invasion. It's called Operation Torch.
Yep.
So, you know, this is the thing. A lot of people don't think that airlift is really that exciting. They're like, give me fighters. Give me bombers.
So who was the famous war theorists? Soldiers think about tactics. Generals think about logistics.
Mm-hmm. Without these airlifters, none of this is going to happen.
Yeah.
And not only that, they're flying. These C-47s, they don't have, you know, weapons on board, you know. Maybe the pilots have, like, a sidearm, but that's about it. So there's no way to fire back.
Yeah.
And they're carrying paratroopers. We've all seen that on Band of Brothers. Yeah. They're flying into these areas where these Nazis are shooting at them. Oh, my gosh. And there's just sand, because it's North Africa.
Yep.
Right? It's just sand. So they were very heavily involved in that.
Wild.
It wasn't just... you know, strategic airlift. It was combat airlift, too.
Yeah.
So very exciting, very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Once, you know, we kicked some butt in North Africa, they went on this little operation called Operation Husky. Which was the invasion of Sicily.
Yep.
And so this is the Allied forces. They're finally getting their toe into continental Europe at the time. And they were towing in paratroopers. They were towing in gliders. If anybody knows anything about gliders...
terrifying.
It's terrifying.
I've flown them and actually almost ripped the wings off.
Yeah. Because
horrifying.
Yeah, it's just wood and some paper.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're towing, like, a truck, a Jeep in the back.
Yeah, it's just that eerie stillness when you let go of the tow plane and like, and it's dead silent and I'm falling. Let's do this.
Yeah, it's like, okay. And, you know, landing, you're only landing once.
Yeah.
That's it. There's no let's go around. No, you just got to go.
A good approach every time.
So, you know, it's this crazy invasion. Mm-hmm. These squadrons are very much a part of this because mm-hmm. without them, the invasion's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So these squadrons and the group decide they're going to stick around the Balkans. Mm. They're doing secret squirrel missions into like Greece and like these other Baltic countries, you know, helping the partisan fighters. Yeah. And it's very, I love that.
It was in the Guns of Navarone if you're going to keep the World War II movies going.
Oh, yeah. And so they're dropping off ammunition. They're taking wounded out. Yeah. I mean, they're helping the fight here. And yeah. I love that. So during this time, the 4th Troop Carrier Squadron,
mm-hmm.
they are sent to India
okay.
just for a few months to help out with the China-Burma-India airlift.
That I feel too many people don't know about as a huge
Not
thing that happened
a lot
in
of people
War II.
Know about this.
Yeah.
And it is affectionately called the hump.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, during World War II, it was the most dangerous air route during the war.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. Both theaters. It was yeah. the most dangerous because you're not just flying from India to China.
Mm-hmm.
There's this little mountain range in between them called the Himalayas. And also you had the Japanese flying around.
Yep.
Who just love to take shots at cargo planes.
Yeah.
And there was a pilot during this time who said that he can make his way to China just by following the gleaming metal through the mountains where all the planes had crashed.
Optimistic for the new guys.
Yeah, very optimistic. But it was incredibly dangerous time. And the 4th Troop Carrier Squadron mm-hmm. actually participated. And unfortunately, they did lose a plane and a crew during this time.
Yeah.
And it was only a couple months they were there.
That's wild.
It is. It's crazy. And so anybody out there, I mean, if you just Google it, Google the hump. General Tunner... he has a book out called Flying the Hump,
mm-hmm.
and you could probably find that wherever you find your favorite books,
yep.
and it's so well written, and he documents the hump and the Berlin airlift just perfectly.
Yeah.
So they did the hump, they come back, and the squadrons participate in Operation Dragoon.
Mm-hmm.
It's another operation that nobody notices because a couple months before that, you had the invasion of Normandy. Well, guess what? We had to come in from the south, too.
Yep.
So in August 1944, the squadrons helped the invasion of southern France.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, towing in gliders, paratroopers, going in, kicking some Nazi butt.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. So they stayed in the Balkans for a while, and then they came back to the United States. Where, in 1947, these squadrons and this group fell under a newly formed wing
mm-hmm.
called the 62nd Troop Carrier Wing. And they came to wonderful McChord Air Force Base.
Okay.
And it's very important to remember during all this time, in the Air Force, we love to change names. If it's been 20 years, we need to change the name. So over time, the 62nd... was the troop carrier wing. It was the air transport wing. It was the military airlift wing. And today it's the airlift wing. And it's the same with our mother organization, our major command.
Mm-hmm.
It was the military air transport service.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was the military airlift command. And today it's air mobility command.
Yeah.
It's like I said, if it's been 20 years, need to change it. Everybody comes from McChord. And we started flying C-82 packets, which is one of the goofiest planes out there.
It looks so comical.
It does. But the interesting thing is it had something that a lot of cargo planes didn't have back then, including the C-47.
Oh, yeah.
Had a rear cargo door.
That's very useful.
Yeah.
Very useful.
Because with the C-47s, the C-54s, the cargo door was on the side.
Yep.
Yeah. And you couldn't just roll a Jeep off that. You had to take it apart, you know. And
slow process.
It was a very slow process, but with the 82, you could just, you know, drive it right onto the ramp.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the 62nd finally at McChord, and they take part in one of their first major humanitarian missions, which was called Operation Hayride.
Okay.
And
always great with the operation names back in the day. Always great.
Well, this one's is exactly what it sounds like.
Oh, yeah?
They loaded the planes up with hay.
Oh, okay.
Mainly because in 1948, the winter of 1948-49, there's this huge snowstorm in the Midwest in the United States. And it stranded small towns.
Oh, wow.
And millions of head of cattle and sheep.
Yeah.
And if you're anything familiar with President Eisenhower, you know, he was the father of the interstate system.
Yeah, he built basically all the infrastructure in the states.
Right. Well, in 48, 49, there is no interstate structure.
Yeah.
So these towns, these ranches, they're covered in snow and nobody's getting to them.
Yeah.
So Truman, President Truman at the time, said, you, the 62nd Airlift Wing, you guys are going to go out there and drop hay to these cattle and these sheep. And we did.
There you go.
And, you know, a couple other wings joined us. You know, it just wasn't us.
All these vets coming back from every military operation in World War II, and they're like, and we're going to drop hay?
We're going to drop hay.
Well, all right.
Think about it. If they didn't feed the cattle, they didn't feed the sheep, what's the rest of the nation going to eat?
That's true. That is true.
Yeah. You know, fish.
Yeah.
So they delivered, I believe it was, they helped feed over 4 million head of cattle and sheep over almost a 200,000 square mile area.
Wow. That is wild.
Oh, it's crazy. So that was their first larger humanitarian mission.
Yep.
So in 1951, we got the C-124 Globemaster IIs. And we'll talk about the IIIs later on. So we got those, and we operated those until 1969.
Mm-hmm.
But these are massive planes compared to what was in the Air Force at the time.
Yeah.
It was I call it a double-decker plane.
Mm-hmm.
So you have cargo on the bottom, and you have passengers up top. And once again, it had a rear cargo door. This is awesome. You drive those Jeeps right up, no problem. So this is perfect because, well, the Korean War is going on at the time.
Yep.
And in the last episode, we were talking about all the airlift.
Yes.
That was coming out of McCord. Well, the 62nd was very much involved in that.
Mm.
Now, we did have like a slight detour. We were at Larson Air Force Base there for just a few years. but we were still helping out in the fight.
Mm-hmm.
During the Korean War, MAT, so our mothership at the time, flew over 43,000 casualties.
Oh, wow.
Back from Japan to the United States and delivered over 80,000 tons of cargo.
That's awesome.
Which, yeah, I mean, this is brand new in the airlift community.
Yeah.
Because before, everything was going on by ship.
Yeah.
It was going by boat. I'm going to hack off the Navy there, call them boats. So for this ability to airlift, like the first time in a major war, this is a game changer.
Yeah. So just the speed and just the ability to be that, you know, on point with what you need when you need it.
Yeah. So you're getting soldiers and supplies there quicker, and you're bringing the wounded back to the United States quicker. So you're saving more lives. And I don't think a lot of people understand that about airlift, that this is not just about, you know, getting the fight to where it needs to be, but it's saving our men and women in uniform. And I can't stress that enough. So also, we were very important during the Korean War.
Mm.
And we actually started our involvement in Vietnam in 1954.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you know, before.
Yeah. So most people think of, like, you know, 63 is kind of the start. But yeah, it was significantly before that.
It was. So at the time, you know, the French are very, very much involved in Vietnam. At the time, it was called Indochina.
Yep.
And because Indochina was a colony of France.
Mm.
So they were in a little bit of a pickle. And the 62nd started flying French troops in and out of Indochina.
Mm.
So that was our first involvement in Vietnam. And obviously it would not be the last.
Yes.
But before then, it's the 1950s. It's the Cold War era. We're all freaking out.
Yep. Duck and cover kids.
It is. We're hiding under desks in schools. And that's when the 62nd started flying up equipment and troops to Alaska, where they were setting up the the distant early warning lines, also known as the dew lines.
Yep.
And these are strategically placed radar systems across Alaska and Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And they help maintain those and build them until 1956. And all I could say is that airlift during the Cold War was just crazy. I love it. Just all those little missions. And I can't get to all of them.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, there were some other things going on. In 1964, there was the Great Alaskan Earthquake.
Oh, wow.
And I think a lot of people here know about that because it was so close.
Yeah.
We're talking, I mean, like, this registered, like, 9.2 on the Richter scale.
Which is insane when, like, that's devastating.
It is.
Wherever it hits.
And what's the crazy part? I mean, obviously, it's, you know, it spawned a tsunami.
Yeah.
But only 131 people died. And that was because of the tsunami.
Yeah.
But it caused, in the 1964, over $300 million in damage. So today, I don't know. That would be billions.
Billions. Billions, yeah.
So the 62nd sent 23 C-124s up there.
Mm.
And, or I'm sorry, they did 23 sorties.
Okay.
Delivering over 1 million pounds of supplies,
dang,
which include beds, infant formula, food, soup, blankets, and charcoal.
Say what you need after, you know, everything collapses around you, literally.
Yeah, you're going to need some charcoal to cook that soup.
Yeah.
So that's how things played out until, obviously, we get into Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And with the 62nd and C, we also started getting the C-141 Starlifters out in. I love those planes. Those are so cool.
Just the classic lines on those, you know, aviation enthusiast dream.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just look so clean and nice. And they are workhorses.
Mm-hmm.
They look nice, but they're workhorses. And I could, with Vietnam, I can go into that forever because we are constantly flying missions to Southeast Asia. We were right in the thick of it. Da Nang, Cameron Bay, we lost planes over there. We lost people.
Yeah.
And it's very important to remember those, too. But what really gets me is this operation, compared to others that we've done, especially recently, it is relatively small.
Yeah.
But I believe it is one of the most important airlifts during Vietnam.
Okay.
So in 1963... the Paris Peace Accords were signed, and we ended the United States' involvement in Vietnam, the combat portion, I should say.
Yeah.
But we wanted our guys back.
Yeah.
The North Vietnamese were holding several hundreds of prisoners of war, and we wanted them back.
Naturally.
And the North Vietnamese are like, fine, you can come and get them. You know, we'll do it in stages.
Mm-hmm.
So... these airlifts began in February 1973, and it was known as Operation Homecoming.
Okay.
The first C-141 to fly in on February 12th was actually from the 60th Military Airlift Wing from Travis.
Okay.
But it had a few of our 62nd guys on there.
Okay.
And this wasn't just let's just go and pick them up and we'll come back.
Not a casual little stayover like they do nowadays?
This was not casual. You're going into enemy territory at the time. Mm. You're going into Hanoi.
Yeah.
And this C-141 became known as the Hanoi Taxi. And the public can actually see it today at the National Air Force Museum. So what was so dangerous about this is that we didn't know if the North Vietnamese were serious.
Yeah.
We didn't know if they were going to make good on this.
Mm-hmm.
And so this plane flies in.
Mm.
And all the guys are wondering, and there's nurses on board too.
Yeah.
Is this really going
to
happen?
Yeah. Are we flying to, you know, prison camp at best or something much worse immediately?
And we had U.S. diplomats on the ground, but so what?
Yeah.
And they landed, and they could see the first round of POWs.
Yeah.
And they're all pretty much wearing the same thing.
Mm.
It looks like they have brand new clothes on.
Yeah.
You know, they're not nice clothes, but, you know, from a distance, they look okay.
Mm.
But none of them are smiling.
Yeah.
None of them are happy. And the loadmaster that was welcoming them on board, he's from the 62nd, mm-hmm. he said these guys just looked minutes away from death.
Yeah.
They were so beaten up. None of them smiled because they were in disbelief.
Yeah.
They've been held for prisoner. One of them for, like, I believe it was 9 years.
Wow.
And who's the longest held POW in the United States history.
Yeah.
And so they board the plane. They get them all settled. The nurses are checking on them and doing what they could do. Mm. Once again, the crew is just like, are they going to let us take off?
Yeah.
And back in the United States at Scott Air Force Base, the vice commander at the time, General Gung, he's waiting on word.
Yeah.
And because one of his friends is one of those POWs. Mm-hmm. I believe he's a colonel at the time. So they get everybody settled, and they take off. Still, you know, none of these prisoners of war make a sound. And because they're scared. They really don't think this is going to happen. And it's
understandably
not,
so after all they've been through.
After everything they've been through, they do not believe this. And it's not until they leave the airspace and the pilot says, okay, you know, we're actually safe. We're gone. We're out of here.
Yeah.
There's this giant roar erupts in the cabin. And the loadmaster at the time thought, oh my gosh, we actually got hit.
Yeah.
That's what he thought it was at the time. It's all these POWs celebrating that, oh my gosh, we're finally going home. And the cheering, there's pictures of it. And it's just so this colonel comes to the cockpit, and General Gung told me this a couple of years ago, and he asked to speak to General Gung over the radio. Mm-hmm. And General comes on, and the POW's like, sir, what the hell took you so long? The general had tears in his eyes. At the time, he was like a spry 93-year-old man when he was telling me the story.
Oh,
but he still relives it every day. And so after that, we sent in some more C-141s, mm-hmm. including those from the 62nd, and airlifted out 591 POWs.
Oh, that's awesome.
Doesn't sound like a lot.
No, but that's huge.
But it's huge.
Yeah.
And so they first came to Clark, Clark Air Base, and then came to Travis.
Okay.
And what was really neat, that they were welcomed with parades and bands. You know, no other Vietnam veteran had experienced that before.
Yeah.
You know, you
unfortunately,
they didn't say, you didn't tell anybody that you were in the Army or in the military. You just didn't. Mm. But they were welcomed because it symbolized an end to this very devastating and even a political conflict. Mm. So that was, I would say, like the first Vietnam airlift that we remember today. The other ones, and we mentioned this slightly on the other episode, those took place starting in April 1975, when South Vietnam, it was going to fall, and it was going to fall quickly. North Vietnamese, they are approaching very quickly. They've taken Cameron Bay.
Yep.
They've taken Da Nang, and they're coming for Saigon. So the first major airlift is called Operation Baby Lift. A lot of people probably read about in the last couple of years because there's been a lot of orphans that have come forward to tell their stories. So in April 1975, a lot of C-141s got together and they started airlifting Vietnamese and Cambodian and Thailand orphans from Southeast Asia to the United States. I want to say, in all military airlift command, they airlifted over 1,700 orphans from Southeast Asia to the United States.
Yep.
And a large majority of those came through McCord.
Okay.
And once again, people were there to welcome them.
Yeah.
A lot of volunteers took care of the children while they're waiting to go to their second homes or for their new parents to pick them up.
Yeah.
They fed them, changed them. A lot of these kids had childhood illnesses, chicken pox, other interesting things that here we don't think are a big deal.
Other parts of the world was still big at the time, unfortunately.
So that was the first airlift. The second one was New Life, and that's when MAC airlifted over 45,000 refugees and American citizens.
That's incredible.
And that was mainly from Saigon. Mm-hmm. And this is not the airlift where you see people on the rooftop, yeah, you know, getting into helicopter. That's frequent wind.
Yeah.
This happened beforehand.
Okay.
But then you ask yourself, well, all those people that were airlifted out by helicopter, mm-hmm, and they went on to, like, these ships.
Yeah.
Who airlifted them out? 60 seconds with all these links. And a lot of these refugees went to, like, Anderson Air Base. They went to Clark.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just massive refugee camps. And these airlifts were going on all the time, mainly, yeah, bringing them to McCord. Okay. And you're talking about 130,000 people.
Just a minor influx.
Just a little minor. It was
drop in the bucket.
Just drop in the bucket. The largest non-combatant airlift at the time.
Wow.
Just massive. I mean, people, yeah, sitting on floors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting how history has a way of repeating itself, because, yeah, we just saw that,
mm-hmm,
a few months ago in Kabul.
Yep.
So the 62nd, we already knew how to do this, you know, because we learned from Operation New Life,
yeah,
and New Arrivals.
Mm-hmm.
So those, when I think of the history of the 62nd, I definitely think of Vietnam. And not a lot of people talk about Vietnam anymore or ever.
Yeah.
Because we're still so focused on the pseudo-romantic era of World War II.
Yeah.
Which should be studied. It should be discussed. Absolutely. But we also need to talk about Vietnam, because a lot of these veterans and a lot of these refugees, they're disappearing.
Yeah.
And they have yet to tell their story.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so important that we let even our newer airmen know, mm-hmm, this is a part of your legacy. And these men and women were heroes too.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely.
I'll get off my soapbox.
Oh, there. No. I, as a fellow historian, like, don't get me wrong, I have my love of World War II and, like, every historian does. But, like, Korea happened, Vietnam happened, all the other smaller operations happened, like, important things were going on in the world. You can't just hold up the larger events, I say in quotes. Like, no, mm-hmm, everything happened. Pay its heed, man.
Yeah. So,
sorry, my soapbox, done.
So I'm always stressing Vietnam.
Yep.
But obviously after Vietnam, the 62nd was always busy. Mm-hmm. They were the first military aircraft to land in the People's Republic of China.
Oh, that's cool.
During the 1972 Nixon,
yep,
visit.
Yep.
In 1975, they welcomed the 36th Tactical Airlift Squadron and their, mm, C-130s. Cool. So the 62nd became the only wing in the Air Force to have both a tactical and strategic airlift. Because, oh, at the, cool, time, they were two, yeah, separate groups.
Yep.
Sadly, you know, it's not always fun and games in the 62nd. Yeah, we're pretty awesome at what we do.
Yeah.
But there are some heartache, mm-hmm, missions in there. One happened, yeah, in November 1978. I think a lot, yeah, of people are familiar with Jim Jones.
Yes.
And
yes, unfortunately.
Yeah, and the People's Temple. So for those who aren't, there's probably dozens upon dozens of documentaries out there.
Yeah.
And this is where the phrase, you know, drink the Kool-Aid came, where...
Get your matching Nikes.
What? Oh, gosh. So, like, hundreds of people, yeah, conducted a murder-suicide pact.
Mm.
And it was the 62nd and a couple other units out there that were actually responsible for airlifting these victims to, wow, Dover.
Yeah.
So they could be identified and their families could claim them.
Mm.
And I think about that. I think a lot of people have seen the overhead photos.
Yeah.
And what a lot of people don't know is that Air Force helos, Air Force, yeah, personnel took those photos.
Yeah, and I had no idea.
it's crazy. I didn't even know about it, mm, until actually studying it. And I can only imagine what those flights were like.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, it's not always fun and games, yeah, where we're hauling a, you know, a tank in the back. Yeah. And it's sometimes a little bit more heartfelt than, yeah, that. Yeah,
no, definitely.
So, going into the 1980s, we participated in Operation Urgent Fury, which, mm, was Grenada.
Yep.
And we airlifted the 82nd Airborne in. We were the first 141 on the ground.
Okay.
And then in 1989, we had Operation Just Cause in Panama.
Yeah.
So 10 McCord C-141s participate in a 51 aircraft formation. If I had saw 51 aircraft coming at me, I would wet my pants and run. It's just like, okay. It was very important in throwing out their dictator. Mm-hmm. And just amazing. And then quickly after that, they're like, hey, thanks for, you know, Grenada. Thanks for Panama. What do you guys think about the Middle East? Because there's this other dictator over there that keeps invading his neighbors. So that's when we got involved in Desert Shield and Desert Storm. So that was fall 1990 to spring 1991. And so Mac is still the military airlift command at this time. And with the 62nd involved with this. By October 1990, so we haven't even gotten to Desert Storm yet. We're still in the Shield. Airlifted over 200,000 troops from the United States to Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
And it was so many. People have probably seen this on TV that even some, we had to contract private industry to help us out. But after that, man, it was round-the-clock airlift. Even the 446th airlift wing, which is a reserve unit here on McCord, they were called up. So everybody was activated. And it was so much airlift that it beat the crap out of these poor C-141s.
Time had finally come.
Oh, man. It's, I mean, between Vietnam and Desert Shield, they're like, okay, you know what? We need a break. You know, we want to be static aircraft now. So, like I said, that was our big buildup in the Middle East. And but, of course, we were doing other things during this time, too. There was the June 1991 eruption of Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines. We call that Operation Fiery Vigil.
Yeah.
Airlifted, I think, I want to say more than like 18,000 people from the U.S. citizens from the Philippines. And a lot of them came to McCord. Once again, the base was here. Hey, guys, welcome. We got you. We understand that you've lost everything, but we're here for you. And then the 1990s, it was just, once again, when people not familiar with the military, when they think of the Air Force, it's all bombs and rockets and fighter planes and, you know, special forces and everything. And sometimes it's not all about that. The Air Force, especially the airlift community, is big into humanitarian missions. And the 1990s was a lot about that. You had Provide Hope. After the Soviet Union fell, you had all these Soviet satellite states are like, well, what are we going to do now? So we're airlifting food and supplies and especially medicine out to these former Soviet states.
That's incredible.
You had Provide Relief and Restore Hope to Somalia, which is... That's a whole other podcast right there. And then the 1993 Los Angeles earthquake. We were getting FEMA and search and rescue teams out there. Speaking of Somalia, we were we flew Warrant Officer Michael Durant from Ramstein to Andrews. So that was the 62nd and the 446. And he was a part of, if anybody's ever seen the movie Black Hawk Down. And then you had Provide Promise in Sarajevo, Support Hope of Rwanda, and the Oklahoma City bombing, which for me, that's personal. You know, I lived in Oklahoma at the time. So I do remember these C-141s coming in with supplies. And then you had a couple of combat missions in there with Joint Endeavor, and that was what was going on in Bosnia and Herzegovina at the time. But was really exciting. And just a few years ago, we celebrated this anniversary. On July 30th, 1999, we got our very first C-17 Globaster III.
And you guys partied like it was 1999, right?
Oh, yeah, we partied like it was 1999. There's pictures on the wall inside the castle of this. So that was the first of many C-17s, and that was named the Spirit of McCord.
There you go.
Just perfect.
It's fitting.
Which was just in time, because obviously a couple of years later, we had the tragedy of 9/11, and the 62nd, the C-17, all these airmen jumped into action.
Yeah.
Constant airlift to New York, D.C., Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And then it started the global war of terrorism and enduring freedom. Mm-hmm. And once again, people think, okay, they're delivering bombs, they're delivering troops. One of the first missions into Afghanistan by the 62nd was actually the airdropping of food to Afghani nationals.
There you go.
It's like, okay, you know, you guys have it bad. Yeah. You have the Taliban. You have this war now.
Yeah.
You know, this is the least we can do right now. And since then, the 62nd has deployed thousands upon thousands of airmen to the Middle East, to Afghanistan, to Iraq, to other air bases in the region. And, I mean, it was a 20-year war.
Yeah.
And not only are we doing that, and I think everybody already knows how impressive that is. I don't have to get on my soapbox about that. No. They know. But, yeah, we're doing that. But we still have those humanitarian missions. Mm. The Christmas tsunami of 2004.
Yeah.
Which just over 200,000 people died.
Yeah, that's unbelievable when put in just like, not trying to, you know, be subjective about disasters, but when you see how much, you know, 9/11, those 3,000 people, 200,000.
And
unfathomable.
So we're flying supplies and relief out there. 2005, you had Hurricane Katrina. We are evacuating people and we're bringing in teams. 2006, that was the largest non-combatant airlift since Vietnam. And that was when we were helping U.S. citizens out of the fighting in Lebanon.
Oh, yeah.
Not a lot of people know about that.
Exactly.
Yeah, the Air Force knows and the Navy knows, and that's about it. Then you had Unified Response in 2010, and that was the earthquake in Haiti. We were one of the first planes in, not the first, but one of the first, and immediately started evacuating people. It was a get in, sit down, hold on to the strap, we're out of here. We're going to get you guys to Florida. We're going to get you to a hospital.
Yep.
And we were bringing in water, medical teams. It was constant. And then something that's a little bit scarier was the 2014 United Assistance. And you're like, okay, that sounds nice.
Yeah.
That was us bringing in teams and supplies during the Ebola outbreak in West Africa.
Yeah.
So you're not only worried about, you know, the basic things that you worry about in these things, but Ebola?
Yeah. Yeah, kind of a horrifying disease.
That's something that gives you nightmare.
Yeah.
And, you know, we also had our deep freeze mission that we talked about earlier. It was constant. And even today, it's that constant thing. It's... Yeah. You know, we're a very much a part of the Kabul airlifts while we're conducting humanitarian airlifts. We are supplying our units and our forces in the Middle East while we're also conducting aeromedical evacuations everywhere.
Yeah.
During the pandemic, we were bringing supplies and vaccines all over the world.
That's continuing that humanitarian you guys have established.
It is, and it's that constant airlift. And so I like to think that, you know, when you see a C-17, it's gonna be like Christmas, and you can only hope that you were a good kid.
That is the best way I've ever heard it described.
So that's once again, that is a little bit about the 62nd Airlift Wing.
Well, thank you very much. I you know, love learning new stories, and just to think more of seeing, you know, those big gray military planes in the sky, and just think, well, knowing now that not only was it the major wars they were involved in, but all the small military operations, these dozens of humanitarian operations and science operations and just things you would not expect out of a military unit.
Yeah.
So thank you very much. For my listeners out there, that was Ms. Erin Lasley, the 62nd Airlift Wing historian, and I'm Joe Boma. That was another Grit City story.